Mrs. Gonzalez, Mr. Schultz.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Eric Schultz and I represent the petitioner in this case, Farhan Khan. The primary issue that I would like the court to consider and I would ask is the sufficiency of notice in this particular case. And this particular case is slightly different than the previous cases that have been heard this morning. The sufficiency of notice in the case at bar involves the sufficiency of the sending and service of the in absentia order of removal against my client.
I need to get something clear here, please. Mr. Khan asserts that he never received a copy of the in absentia order of removal. And you say that because he didn't get notice of the removal order, he had an unlimited amount of time to file his motion to reopen under 1229A(b)(5), right?
Essentially, that's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, but here's my problem. That statutory provision applies to notices to appear, which Khan did receive, not to notices of removal. So what I need from you is the authority that you have for the proposition that a lack of notices to the order of removal lifts any time limit on moving to reopen.
Your Honor, I believe that it would be in the conjunction with the section that Your Honor cited, along with the regulatory provision that does require that an in absentia order of removal be served on an alien respondent by first class mail. The combination of the statutory requirement and the regulation that service of an order be provided to an alien respondent would operate, and I would respectfully submit to say that if an alien respondent does not actually receive the order and the order, there's no proof that the order is actually served in the record, and I would respectfully submit that there is, despite the fact that there is a transmittal letter in the record, and despite the fact that the transmittal letter is signed, there's no proof that the letter was actually sent. That the combination would mean that in this particular case, the petitioner in this case would be able to make a motion once he does learn of the in absentia order against him. Now, I would acknowledge that there's not, in my knowledge in reviewing and researching this case, this may be new ground in some ways, because as I said, this is a little different than the context where somebody did not receive the notice to appear or somebody did not receive a notice of hearing. In this case, Mr. Khan initiated proceedings by affirmatively filing for asylum in the United States. He did attend his asylum interview. On the basis of the asylum interview, he was placed into removal proceedings. He did appear at his first hearing pro se, and he was scheduled for an individual hearing that he did miss. And the entire time, the record shows that Mr. Khan was pro se, and the context where an alien such as Mr. Khan is pro se, where he has given a reason for why he did not attend the individual hearing, which is his illness, and he does explain that he couldn't understand what he was supposed to do to answer to the failure to attend. I would respectfully submit that the court would have an obligation. It does have an obligation to properly send an order of removal in absentia, and that where there's no actual affidavit of service, there's no actual certificate of service, there's no proof of mailing, there's no proof of the letter or the envelope being used with postage, there's no proof that the letter was returned undeliverable, where there's no proof, then the in absentia order was not, I would respectfully submit that the record does not reflect that you can rely on proper service of the in absentia order. Now, With that in mind, I respectfully offer that the record indicates that as soon as Mr. Khan learned of what had happened, and again, he was pro se, and he was not as aware as was stated in the prior argument. There's a myriad of procedural requirements that anybody would have a difficult time wading through, and he was pro se. But as soon as he learned of the situation, having met with another attorney, he tried to rectify the situation, and that would be the basis of the original question that was asked. Is it an unlimited period of time? Not really unlimited, but it has to be reasonable within the context of when the incident is really understood and what's done. Was it a reasonable period of time? He did file his motion to reopen within approximately 150 or so days, as prior counsel pointed out in her motion to reopen into the board. Now, I would also respectfully offer that the immigration judge and the Board of Immigration Appeals did not directly address his sworn statement that he did not get and he did not receive the in absentia order. And I believe that's very important as to the question of whether I've argued in my brief that this case merits de novo review as a question of law on the constitutional issue of due process. The government argued that this is an abuse of discretion issue, but I would respectfully submit that even if this were to be under the abuse of discretion standard, there's not a clear review as to whether my client, Mr. Khan's statement that he did not receive, under oath, that he did not receive the order, was considered. And I would offer that this court's decision in Joshi v. Ashcroft would offer some guidance as to this context. It's a little different because Joshi v. Ashcroft concerned the service of the notice to appear. But I would respectfully offer that it's in a similar context where Mr. Khan initiated the immigration proceeding by filing for asylum. He did attend the first appearance before the immigration court. He stated his reason for missing his court appearance, and within a reasonable time, he did make his motion and advised that the order was not received by him, despite him being at the same address, despite him otherwise receiving mail. He did not receive this mail, and I respectfully offer that any presumption that the letter was properly served would be rebutted by Mr. Khan's statement. So at minimum, as we've asked, we would ask for the remand of this matter administratively to allow for disposition of all these issues.
What actual evidence did he present that circumstances had changed for the worst in Pakistan since the IJ order entered?
Thank you, Your Honor. He did submit letters from his family primarily. He submitted his own statement, and he also submitted a letter from his sister regarding the incidents and regarding the fact that she's aware that his father and brother have been accosted by Pakistani police who were looking for him. And that, to my understanding and the way that it's presented by prior counsel and by Mr. Khan in the motion to reopen, that did occur after he was in the United States. So that would be the change of circumstances that was offered at the time. Of course, time has transpired since then. The motions to reopen were filed in 2003, and the administrative record was set as for further judicial review by the administrative record then. But that at that time was the additional information offered.
We've got a 3.5-year time gap between the in absentia removal order and his motion to reopen. Is that right?
I believe it was 2.5 years. Yes.
2.5 years.
That's right, Your Honor. That's true. And as was stated in the motion to reopen, he, as a pro se respondent, didn't know what to do. And once he did...
Well, he had notice of the hearing. That's
he did
conceded.
Have notice of the hearing, yes.
And the excuse he's offering for missing it now is that he was sick.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And he had 2.5 years to present that excuse to the immigration authorities as the reason why he missed his hearing?
Well, he, as he stated in his affidavit in support of the motion to reopen, he was under the impression, again, as a pro se respondent, unfortunately, he didn't have counsel at the time, but he was waiting for the court to contact him, and he didn't receive anything. And again, that goes back to the initial point that I offered. I respectfully conclude by stating that he didn't receive the order. Had he received it, he would have had the opportunity to do something.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Schultz.
Thank you.
Mr. Grimes?
May it please the court, James Grimes for the Attorney General. I think preliminarily I'd like to lay out what we are talking about, what we're not talking about. An alien who wants to reopen his in absentia order obviously has two options. The first, which is not presented here, is that he can file a motion at any time if he can show that he didn't receive the order. And of course, below at pages 18 and 23 of the record, he conceded that he did receive notice of the hearing, and the record does reflect that at pages 122 and 123. So what we're dealing with is...
I think you just misspoke, counsel. You said he can file the motion at any time if he didn't get notice of the order. That's not...
If I said order, I did misspeak. That's correct, Your Honor. If he can show that he didn't receive notice of the hearing, that's what I intended. Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
And this is an attempt, essentially, to bootstrap the lack of notice of the in absentia removal order into that law.
I think you could say that. Yes, Your Honor. If he'd filed a timely motion, he could have tried to fit under the exception where if you file a motion within 180 days of the order, if you can show exceptional circumstances, then your absence could be excused. But of course, as Your Honor indicated in questions, he filed his motion 2.5 years, more than 2 years too late. So it was untimely, as the board indicated. And although he argued equitable tolling below, now he's asserting that if the deadline flatly can't apply to him. And as we indicated in our brief and in our Rule 20HA letter, there is evidence that it was mailed, and it's the transmittal letter which was sent to his address by the immigration court clerk.
Are you talking about that signed form in the record that showed that he was served with the order of removal? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, Your Honor, page 104 of the record.
Well, that's just a transmittal letter. That doesn't show that he actually received the order.
That's correct, Your Honor. It doesn't. But the statute doesn't require that actual receipt be shown. The statute, the time frame starts to run from the issuance of the decision, not from receipt. The government isn't required to show receipt, and service by regulation is effective on mailing. So whether or not he, and actually I believe what he specifically said was he didn't remember receiving anything from the court. So whether or not he actually remembers receiving it really isn't the issue. What's the issue is whether or not it was sent, and under Lavosky there is evidence that it was sent. And so the board was correct to find that it was untimely. And I would hasten to point out that even if he were arguing tolling, at page 122 of the record is the notice of the hearing, and it says, if the government shows that you're removable, you will be ordered removed. That's the actual language. So he knew what was most likely going to happen if he didn't appear. And there's also on page 122 is a phone number they could call to determine what the status of his case was. But instead, he didn't do anything. And then he said, I believe at page 24 of the record, that he spoke to an attorney who told him about the order in November 2002. So he spoke to counsel in November 2002, but he didn't file the motion until September 2003, which is 10 months later. So I would submit that that's not, even if tolling were a possibility, 10 months is not a reasonable time period in which to file your motion, and particularly if you've spoken to counsel about it. He has to show that he acted with diligence, and I don't believe that 10 months is acting with diligence, so he wouldn't be entitled to tolling. And really more to the point, even if tolling applied, he'd have to show exceptional circumstances for failing to appear. I don't think he's addressed that in his brief and hasn't addressed that this morning, so I suppose he's implicitly conceded that he couldn't show exceptional circumstances because all he alleged was that he had the flu in his own declaration, which wasn't supported by a letter from a doctor or a letter from coworkers or anything of that matter, and he didn't connect. He really didn't demonstrate that it was a serious illness, as he must. As the immigration judge said, he didn't show that he had a serious illness, even if we got to that point. So under Kay and Ersachi and the board's decision in matter of JP, he simply can't show exceptional circumstances. And I would note that in Kay, this court said that the fact that an alien is pro se, that fact alone is not enough to excuse his noncompliance with the rules. So I would invite the court's attention to that decision. So because he can't show that the board abuses discretion in denying the motion to reopen his in absentia order, he's statutorily ineligible to adjust his status, and as the board indicated, because he was informed of the consequences of failing to appear, and then he failed to appear, he's ineligible to adjust. The board cited the decision in matter of MS, which is a case that deals with that statutory bar, which is found at 1229A, subsection B7. So that takes us to the motion to reopen the asylum case for changed conditions. Now, he can file that motion outside the 90-day window for normally for motions to reopen if he shows changed conditions. But as we pointed out in our brief at page 24, he didn't argue changed conditions in his brief to this court. Now, he's sort of talked about that in response to Judge Rovner's question, but I think if you look at what he's alleged, and if you look at the record, the evidence that was in the record at the time of the immigration judge's decision, principally at pages 130 and 152, what he's really shown is that conditions have not changed. He's shown evidence of the ongoing treatment of members of the MQM and their family members, and that's the exact evidence that was in the record at pages 130 and 152, and it's evidence that the conditions are the same. And that's not evidence of changed conditions, it's evidence of the same conditions, and that, of course, is not sufficient to meet the regulatory and statutory requirement for a motion to reopen outside the 90-day window. And because that is the case, he cannot show, and he has not shown, that the board abuses discretion in denying his motion to reopen. So unless there are any further questions, we ask that you deny his petition for review.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Grimes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Schultz, how much time does he have? No time. Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Schultz. And Mr. Grimes?